Well, as of tonight, Vladimir Putin can be confident he has clinched popular approval to serve another two terms as Russia's president, should he so choose. That'd put him in the Kremlin not until 2024, as it now stands, but until 2036, when he'd be in his 80s. It's the last day of 2 weeks of voting on a bunch of constitutional proposals, but the extended term for Putin, and only for Putin, is the big one. But has the shine gone off the already long-serving president? My next guest heard someone late last year describe Putin as the old man, a far cry from the bare-chested He-Man image he's preferred. So let's talk to Kremlin watcher Mark Galeotti. He's an honorary professor at the University College London School of Slavonic and East European Studies about why Putin is holding this referendum.
Well, obviously, we have to be very careful about believing anything the Russian government says. But on the other hand, it has to be said also that this is at the moment still a fairly flimsy story. We haven't had any proper backing. And as quite disarmingly, the Taliban's own spokesman said, we don't need money to kill Americans. So I think in some ways this is really more about the domestic politics taking place in Washington necessarily than the relationship between America and Russia.
But the GRU does have form, doesn't it? Think the 2016 US Democratic Party email hacks, the 2018 nerve agent attacks on Salisbury in England, all presumably with President Putin's knowledge or at least tacit approval?
Absolutely. There is no question but that the GRU, like all the Russian intelligence services, is a fairly murderous outfit when it feels the need to do so. But on the other hand, the Russians are actually, sounds ridiculous to say this, but quite cautious in their assassinations and murders. They essentially target, as it were, people whom they regard as their own. In other words, traitors who are Russians, Chechen insurgents, that kind of thing. We haven't yet seen them really go out and especially not go after Americans. In some ways, this is that also tells us something about the perception of Russia, is that people are very, very quick to assume that basically almost any story could be true when it comes to Moscow.
Yes, and then you add issues like the war in Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea, Russia's role in cyber attacks. I mean, it all fuels this perception, doesn't it? So when it comes to this referendum, I think a lot of people are effectively saying, well, look, this is a despot, an autocrat clinging on to power. Is that a fair description of Putin?
He's a funny, very postmodern kind of autocrat in that, you know, Russia today, it's an autocracy and a kleptocracy, but it's not just an autocracy and a kleptocracy. In the elections, the public opinion does have a certain impact. That said, I mean, this is clearly the election, the vote that is taking place on the constitutional changes. I mean, they are really part of a long-term plan for Putin, or a long-term sort of set of trying to create a future for himself, because he's in the position of any mafia don. How do you step down from power when everything you have, everything you control, everything you own is really to do with your job?
Now, we have no doubt that this referendum is going to pass, this zeroing of the term so he can start again. But Russia has not been without dissent, and reliable polling has indicated a striking growth in an appetite for change in recent years. So why does Putin need to cement himself in power now? He's been there a long time. Hasn't he worked out the succession?
Well, this is the thing. I think that he is very much, in a way, a victim of his own mythology. He has come to believe himself as the absolutely indispensable man. And that's at odds with the fact that he also seems increasingly tired, increasingly disconnected. I mean, if one looks at the way he basically abdicated rule responsibility for dealing with coronavirus, something that the Russians themselves have noticed. So I think this is his challenge. And to be honest, we shouldn't assume that just because these constitutional changes would allow him to stay in power until 2036, that he wants to do that. This is actually classic Putin. It's about giving himself options for the future. If he manages to find a successor, if he manages to actually believe that he can hand power and still maintain his position, his security and his legacy, then he may do that. But on the other hand, if when his current term comes to an end in 2024, he feels that the situation is too dangerous, he hasn't found a successor he can trust, this gives him the option of staying on. Putin is not someone who builds these long, carefully detailed plans and then sticks to them. He's much more of a fluid opportunist, but so he creates different routes that he can take when he needs to make that decision.
This referendum is interesting too, isn't it? Because there's a sort of a grab bag of other issues to enshrine in the constitution around marriage between a man and a woman only, respecting religious heritage. And then there's a couple of good economic enticers, isn't there? Are those there simply to entice people to vote?
Absolutely. It's all the sugarcoating. Because the interesting thing is things like index linking pensions and so forth, you don't need a constitutional change for that. Things like sort of saying that Russians are a naturally state-building people, that's just wordage. Marriage between a man and a woman is already enshrined within Russian law as the only acceptable form of marriage. No, this, the rest is absolutely, it's the crowd-pleasing stuff to get people out to vote so that either they don't notice or that they don't care about the core element, which is the political change. And if you look at how the Russian media, until very recently, were pushing the vote, it was absolutely in terms of the social provisions. They were hoping to basically slide in the political stuff without people really paying attention.
And so will there have been manipulation of the vote?
Almost certainly. I mean, the thing about Russian votes is what matters is not the outcome. We know what the outcome is going to be. The outcome is going to be ultimately whatever the Kremlin wants it to be. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean to say that these votes don't matter. What really counts, what is important, is how much effort does the Kremlin have to put in to get the results it wants? How expensive will it be providing all kinds of sweetness to the electorate? How much propaganda? How much muzzling of dissent? And when it comes down to it, how much out-and-out ballot box stuffing? Because they announce, obviously, the fake results, but they know the real results, and they pay great attention to this. We've already seen that, particularly through online voting, there are already quite a few indicators of there having been some quite dubious practices, surprise, surprise. So there will have been rigging. The question is, in a way, what lessons will the Kremlin be learning from how big a gap is there between the real result and the result they announce?
And what do you think the lessons are, given that we've seen people on the streets to some extent in recent years? We do still see some reasonably lively commentary around politics in Russia. And now this vote, what do you think the lessons will have been for Putin?
I think three things. One is that there is a genuine degree of Putin fatigue. It was interesting. I was on a commuter train in Russia last year, shamelessly eavesdropping. And for the very first time, I actually heard someone refer to Putin as the old man. You know, for someone whose political persona is so built on his macho chief executive role, that's really quite striking. And I think that's something that we've seen generally. So this will have been, I think, a rather unwelcome wake-up call. But the second two lessons are more policy-oriented. He's tried to basically rebuild his legitimacy on the basis of a social contract that says, look, the world is a dangerous place, everyone hates Russia, and that's why we need a strong, powerful leader. And that's clearly not working. Russians are just not buying it. So what we're probably going to see, and this is the final lesson, is pivoting back to essentially fridge and TV politics, giving people a bit of spectacle, but at the same time addressing people's quality of life. The Russians are planning on dumping a lot of money into infrastructure developments, technology developments, and so forth. I think the aim will be, to put it very bluntly, buying back a certain amount of popularity with the Russian electorate.
Mark Galeotti, good to speak to you today.
A pleasure.
Russia expert Mark Galeotti.